Well, they start the bird survey again at the end of March. By monitoring the dippers and grey wagtails from Pie Corner, they call it.
Right.
And I follow the river all the way up the Crown Reservoir, the top side of Ebbw Vale. That's the source of the River Ebbw. And along that piece of river and the adjoining river, which is the Ebbw Vach, I've got over 40 nests of dipper. And around about 20 odd nests I record every year of grey wagtail. And two of those sites happen to be on the navigation, both ends of the long tunnel. So the north end and the south end both got dipper nests.
Wow.
The south end has definitely got a regular grey wagtail nest in there. And the top end, the north end, occasionally a grey wagtail nest. When I first started doing it, which is now 11 years ago, I could just walk around the end of the fence with my ladder on my shoulder, and of course it's become more secure than that since. So I now get the code off Vera, and I go there probably four times a year, depending on the timing of the nesting. Possibly a fifth sometimes if I miss the time things. It's all part of a monitoring scheme with the British Trust for Ornithology. The 40-odd dipper nests that I record is just a drop in the ocean for the British Trust for Ornithology. But when they put all these drops in the ocean together, they get a good idea of what's going on in the ornithological world, as it were. And it's good fun, I enjoy doing it. That's the main thing.
Do you do it on your own? Do you have to be very quiet?
Mainly on my own. I sometimes take a trainee bird ringer along with me. Somebody who's interested in photography maybe comes along, but mostly I do it on my own.
What about the time of day? Presumably that's important.
I try to do it between dawn and midday. It's the quieter part of the day. You spend a devil lot of time chatting with people otherwise, and I love chatting with people, but it doesn't get the job done. You know, I'll stand on the back talking or someone will chat for about 20 minutes and I think, God, I think I've done another dipper's nest by now, you know. So I try to do it early morning, and by midday, well, I've had enough going on. So, you know, 70 years of age and wore out by midday, so I go home and have lunch and put my feet up.
So if you go, say, like you're looking at the bottom of the tunnel and you see a nest, how can you tell if it's got if it's active, if there's eggs in it?
Well,
they're using
generally, you know, I can look at the nest without putting the ladder again. Carry a small ladder with me, without putting the ladder against the wall, and you can see it's fresh, it's been rebuilt. And as you're clambering around your ladder, the dipper usually flies out anyway. You know, so. But mostly you've got to actually go up to the nest and put your hand in and feel around and see what's in there. Count the eggs. Count the young, as it were, aren't you? Timing you can usually do pretty well because your knowledge of the timing of the breeding. You know? When the young are what, about 7 to 8 days old, it's the ideal time to put rings on them, which will identify them as individuals for the rest of their life then. And the adults will have colour rings on them. So I can say, oh yes, it's red over blue, that's the female from Crumlin South or whatever, you know, without having actually to catch them again. I actually put three. There's either a red or a yellow on the left leg, and that indicates male or female. So if it's yellow, it's a female. If it's red, it's a male. On the other leg, there's two colour rings. And those two colour rings identifies it at that site. So it's a female from Crumlin South or a male from Triumph School or whatever, you know. So they're identified forevermore as individuals.
Oh.
And for the first time this year, I had a male who was 8 years old. It equals a record lifespan for a dipper. So he's not going to be about to next spring, I wouldn't think. I'd be really pleased to think he is, but I don't think he's going. He's at just below Blina, the nest under an old arch bridge there, real ancient old brick arch bridge there. He's not nested there for 8 years. He's been in four different places along the river. At four different waves over 8 years. Well, what happens is one dies off and then the other one has to move to find a mate or stay put and sing and attract the mate. But you get bigamous males, very often get one male with two nest sites, you know. All sorts of complications. And this guy was born down at Abertillery by the fire station there. He was a pulley in or baby in the nest there. He went from there to another site just up in the park there, in Abertillery Park. From there he went all the way up the valley to the little side stream, which is, yeah, come to there, yeah. And he reared young there, and then he went down then to just below Blaenau where I recorded him last year. So he got up a fair bit in those 8 years. And I know all that because he's got the colourings on his neck, and I can just look and tell you where he's from.
So how many different colours do you have? I'm just doing the maths in my head.
I think it's 14 colours. And then, of course, you can make ever so many combinations of that.
Right, well, I assume you don't know.
When you run out of one combination, you can switch the male ring to the other leg and start all over again. So I think I can, there's somewhere up around about 200, is it something I can, combinations wow. I can do. There's, some of them are not so easy to see as that. There's obviously red, blue, green, there's a brown, there's a yellow, there's a shocking pink, a real, you know, shocking pink, and then there's an ordinary pink. Don't combine those if I can help it. You know, there's an orange, which very often gets mistaken for brown, black and white, yeah. It's the easy to see colours, you know. The really easy ones.
What about green?
Yeah, do green. Surprisingly easy to identify. You'd think it wouldn't be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you'd think
it would. On the rocks in the river, yeah. Biggest mistakes are between orange and red. And shocking pink, after about 3 or 4 years, goes not so shocking. Goes more pinkish. To complicate that, every baby gets a shocking pink ring on his right leg. That tells me it's a young bird that hasn't been ringed as a breeding bird.
So when do you ring?
So when he's re-caught, he gets then his twin colours. As soon as I can catch him after the first year.
So
you know, so I see a shocking pink pulley, as I call them. Pulley, as it means baby bird, basically. You see one with a shocking pink ring on it on the river, and you purposely put a net up to catch up, and you want to catch up.
So how do you catch it? Is that a big net?
Long, fine nylon net stretched across the river, and there's four pockets, there's four loops there. And as the bird hits the net, he forms a loop on the other side, and he's in there. He's in that pocket. There's strands going through the netting, and those strands form four pockets in the net, all with the river. And as the bird hits the net, he pushes the net forward and down.
So that pocket.
So he gets trapped in that pocket.
In that pocket.
Sometimes you get two, yeah. Yeah, because yeah, the net is very flexible, you know, they're very loose pockets. And that's good. If you can catch male and female together, bang, bang, straight in, that's good. You know,
do they get distressed or do they like breathe?
Well, there's obviously stress involved. Yeah. But the fact is, you know, that male's been there for 8 years, so couldn't be that bad, could it?
Can you tell? Is it easy to tell how old they are?
The BDO keeps a catalogue, a computerised catalogue, of course, of all the colour ringing.
Yeah.
So they'll know my colour combinations.
Yeah.
And if a bird just comes in as a sighting of colour rings, they'd be able to tell you whether it's mine or one from up north of Wales or whatever. I had one come down to somewhere south of Newbridge, and that one came from mid Wales. He'd come quite, you know, how many kilometres he'd come. And it was a male. And that's,
wow,
that's the furthest travel dipper I've had up till now.
So
the furthest one for me went from Abergele over to Pontypridd. There's a large sewage works there, just below Pontypridd, and a bird ringer caught it in a net there on the sewage works. Well, on the river adjacent to the sewage works. And that's my furthest one at the moment. But I had one come to me from way up in mid Wales or something. So, you know, mine have been going that far as well.
You see, yeah.
Nobody's caught them.
Can you tell, do they get bigger after that first year, or you know, if you look at it,
changing plumage. They start off a speckledy colour, like a baby robin. A young robin in his first few months is just speckledy colour all over, and young dippers are like that as well, just speckled all over. By the autumn, they look exactly like their parents, and you can't tell the difference. So then I'm looking for rings, I'm looking for colour rings, or the lack of. If there's no rings on one of the adults feeding at the nest, I'll put a net on and catch it and put rings on it. Because in time, it will save me and the bird a lot of stress. Well, not stress for me, it's quite fun for me, going up to this whole hunting instinct job, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it'll save the bird, you know, the stress of being caught and ringed and so on.
And do they really spend all, well, they can't spend all their life on the river, but...
Pretty well.
Obviously they have to leave a river to go from Brumlin to Pontypridd.
They're doing is following little rivulets, little streamlets over the mountains. They've followed little streamlets up a mountain, down a mountain, whatever.
So what do they feed on?
Even down to the seashore and back up a river.
Right.
That's been known as well. They've been caught down on meter feeding on the estuary, and of course they'll go up another river and find their own there. It's young birds looking for territories of their own. Most movement is done in that first year. Long distant movements.
Right.
But these intermediate movements are because of one of the parents died off. What's happening is there's a male looking for a territory, and he stumbles along the territory that has got a male in it, but it's got a female in it, you know, and vice versa. If it's a male looking for a female, you'll sit on a rock in the middle of the river and sing until one comes along, basically. You know, that's what all this singing is about, you know, whether it be a blackbird or whatever.
So they pretty much do mate for life then, it's only when one of them...
It's difficult to say, really, but I rather think they do, because of the longevity of the ones I know of, you know. You do have the bigamous ones. You know, I've had a male servicing three nests. To have two that's not unusual at all.
That's not unusual.
Not unusual at all. But along the river, you will have a male down here that's got another female, three nest territories further up. So he's crossing two other territories to get his other female, you know?
Wow,
and you wouldn't think that would happen, but no. It does, yeah.
Well, what do they actually feed on, and what do they feed the babies on?
They feed them almost entirely on insect larvae out of the water, caddisfly, mayfly, and so on. Of course, their breathing is timed to when those things are caught walking up the walls, coming out of the water, hatching out of their little cocoons, and the dippers are rearing their young in that period. Well, there it comes natural to start nest. They're nest building now. You know, they're old in territory, repairing and building the nest now.
Oh,
and they will repair the same old nest year. Like, I've got a dipper nest, Sabacan it is. Below there, in a very deep cutting, is the river. Big tunnel that goes under the one of the flats, the tunnel is. I was told about that nest by an old chap who took eggs from there when he was a boy. Now, if you work it out, that nest had been there some like 50 odd years. And it's still there now, they're still using it. And of course, it's a combination of the one with the pair dying off, another one coming in, the other one dies off, another one comes in. So I took the guy there, and I said, where's the nest then? He said, it's just below that pipe, he said, in the mosses, he said, on the wall. And I said, that's right, it's still there now. In the exact same spot where he took eggs of it when he was a boy. And it works out like 56 years ago or something. Incredible, isn't it?
That is incredible, yeah.
The beauty of those old industrial sites, there's walls and tunnels and bridges and still there, the old stonework. And when they built these arches, I'm a builder, so I know what I'm talking about. When you build an arch, you build a former, a wooden former, yeah? And this rests on pieces of steel or wood in the wall, mostly wood, because you could just cut it off and leave it there afterwards. So along the bottom where the arch meets the upright, along here there's a series of holes where the wood is long gone, because it had rotted out donkey years ago, and left these nice 6-inch holes, and that's where you find a lot of them in there. You know, I got one at the old site there at Abertillery, and Devil's all finding this spring, they changed their site. And then I suddenly seen a dipper dart out. They put 2 foot above the water. It's all in the arch.
What shape is the dipper's nest?
A dipper's nest is quite bulky. It's football size. So in the hole, it's only like this big. But then they bring a big canopy out over the top and a big bowl underneath. And you've got to put your hand up in like that to get in there. You know, it's up and in. You can't look in the nest because of this big canopy over the top. And that keeps the end dripping water. There's a lot of water in these situations, you know, it stops the water dripping over and it hides the nest from predators and that. It's quite a construction.
What stops?
It takes some months to make it. It's not suddenly something like a blackbird builds in a week or something. These diplomatic monster build these nests. The biggest predators of your found has been crows and magpies and things. Because they get away, they hear the young and they go looking. But it is further up the tunnel because they're afraid of green pieces like that. So it's the situation is in the protection maybe. If it's low on the water, they're vulnerable to an otter or something, a mink. Not too many these days, but there's mink along the river. Yeah. And there's otters along the river.
Do you see evidence of that along the site?
All the time, yeah, all the time. So, but the biggest predators would be avian predators. You know, a magpie or a crow would hear the young calling for food. They're feeding their own.
And they can get in at the entrance.
They just cling to the wall and put their head in. Don't get a devil lot of predation. Predation every year will be down as much as 10% probably, you know, the nests, which is not a lot. Whereas an open nest for blackbirds and song thrush they must lose every other one, I would think. But they've all got a part to play, you think of magpies stealing the eggs and young of it, but it's all part of the natural cycle of events, you know. Magpies do a good job otherwise, you know, cleaning up dead things. And another thing that is peculiar to the diplomat, I don't know any other bird that does it, they build their nest directly over the water. They don't carry the fecal sac away, the youngsters just do it straight out of the nest. But it goes straight into the water, and that's another deterrent for predators. If they don't find the droppings, they don't find the nest. Never ever find a dipper's nest that is not directly over the water, unless the water has receded tremendously. And then, because I sat and took photographs of the nest, and I couldn't believe what I was watching, the female, there was pebbles there because the river had receded so much, the nest was no longer over the water. She'd go in, feed the young, drop down to the pebbles, clean up the droppings off the pebbles and go down to the river and wash her bill in the river. And every time they come to feed, that's what they would do. They would feed the young, drop down to the pebbles, clean up the mess, go to the river, wash their bill in the river. When they first seen it happening, I couldn't believe it was happening, but they probably do it all the time. Right? Photographs of the bird coming and going. But
you can't sort of prove
it. You say it all happens so quick, doesn't it? And they don't go to these places in the river every time. No. So you can't focus your camera on one spot. And, no. Yeah, it'd be nice to have a photograph of that.
Yeah.